I am sorry to be a little bit late. I just finished fixing my car's air. It was broken.
You just finished fixing what?
My car's central air. Just all the air in it. None of
air
it worked.
Air conditioning.
Well, not air conditioning. Just the air in general. I don't know. If you call air conditioning all of air, then yeah. But the heater wasn't working and stuff. So.
Okay. Should we stick to computers?
Yes.
And welcome to the second episode of Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. On this week's show, Jacob Penderworth from California, Dr. Richard Harkness from the northeast of England, and myself, Johnny Winter from Brighton in Sussex. On this week's show, we look backwards at the best apps of 2012, we look forwards at what 2013 holds for the Mac, and we look like a bunch of 3Ds discussing Mac stuff. Jacob, do you have your iced mocha?
No, actually, I am just right now photoshopping an image that I just took of my hot chocolate with my pecan pie.
You're a hipster, aren't you?
Pecan pie.
Yes. You're a hipster. You're going to apply a rubbish filter to it to make it look like a 1970s photo, and you're going to post it on the interwebs.
Why, no, sir. I'm not an Instagrammer. Hold on. I'm going to make it really tiny so it uploads fast. The photo is titled Pie and Chocolate. How perfect. And it is, I just increased the blacks a little bit. I didn't put a filter on it. I don't like filters. They're okay. For noobs.
Okay, so from Hipsterville in California over to Richard. Have you got a cup of tea?
I'm sticking with pure water, thank you.
Okay. I've got my cup of Red Bush. So, shall we get on with it then?
Yep.
Macintosh. And what a week it's been for Mac news. Jacob, what's been happening?
Well, Apple is now offering next day shipping for free on all of its items. And that's useful for anyone who wants to buy a Mac for Christmas or just randomly at the same time as the world is going to end. If you order it today, you could probably get it by that time. And then all your money would be gone.
Well, the good news for the Mayans is if they got it wrong, it's not the end of the world.
It's true.
So free shipping on all items, Jacob. So even if I wanted to order a cable from Apple, they'd send it free?
Not technically, no. All of Apple's products, so an iPad, an iPod, iPhone.
But maybe the official Apple accessories, I'm thinking of the cheap items, because normally there's... a minimum order value, is there not?
According to Mac Rumors, it says that on nearly everything sold on the Apple online store, ensuring delivery in time for the holidays. So, they don't list anything, I mean, but you could always check the store, and then I'll bet you if you order maybe a cable, an extra lightning cable to go with your iPad mini, then it would probably be on there. But there's also there's a shipping info link. You can get gift cards by email. Of course, those deliver really fast. Or a customized Mac or other products. And it says the Apple TV is going to be one-day shipping, and so are iPhoto print products. And then it says all other products, check your cart. So
there was one item there that you mentioned, Jacob, that piqued my interest, something I think I read in the last couple of days. Did you say they're sending iTunes gift cards by email?
Yes.
Is that something new?
Actually, I think it might be. I don't think I've heard of it before.
I think that is a recent development, but yep, I don't know whether it applies to the US only.
Yeah, that's a good question. You could always try to go to store.apple.com/UK and then /browse.
Sure. And this free next day shipping offer that Apple is doing, I had a look earlier. It's not applicable to the UK, where there is an £80 minimum order value to get the free delivery. In the USA, how long is this offer running for, Jacob?
Oh, let's see. It says that You have to order by it's not how long it's running, it's more. You have to order by midnight on the 21st on most products. And then other ones have free 2 to 3 day shipping. So it's an equivalent of Amazon, pretty much.
Okay, so get your orders in before Christmas to ensure free delivery.
Most likely it'll be there on Christmas Eve. Would you order one if it was available over there?
Nah, I'm skint.
Same here.
Okay.
I would free delivery wouldn't bother me in the slightest when you're dropping, you know, a grand on something.
That's true. They're just trying to help you get it.
Oh, yeah, it's just another thing. I'm more interested in the 0% finance that they've got going on over here at the minute.
Now, the 0% finance offer is an interesting one. That offer, if I understand it correctly, is running in the Apple UK store.
Yep.
They're giving you 0% finance over 10 months. So effectively, you pay the cost of your purchase in 10 equal installments over 10 months, which makes the new iMac quite attractive at about £150 a month.
Absolutely.
Is a similar offer running in the US for that, Jacob?
Actually, I think there is. Because when I got my first computer, my parents financed it with, I think it's the Barclay card is what they use over here. And I think I had a 6 or 12 month one. And I'm looking right now to see if I can find it. You select your computer and then... 6, 12, or 18 month. And I'm not seeing percentages on here, though.
So that's not Apple Finance, no?
It is. It's they partner with a place called Barclay Card. And
I think that's what it is in the UK as well, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a global thing. I thought it was a part of Citibank or something, but I don't actually remember.
I think that 0% over 10 months has to be quite an attractive way for somebody to buy a new iMac, especially indeed. The prices that they are. It almost makes it affordable if you know that you've got 10 equal installments and you're not paying anything for the finance. It's a sensible use of money.
I was highly tempted.
What they have over there, is it, what's the maximum? Is it 6, 12, 18, or do they have different options?
Just 10 months.
It's just 10 months, straight 10 months.
Okay.
But as far as I know, there's no upper limit to it neither. So you could go full out if you like.
Yeah, this one's 12 months, $499 to $1,998, and then if you want to go above that, it's an 18 month one.
So Richard, what's on your virtual shopping list in the Apple Store?
Oh, actually, it is no interest.
I actually looked into what it would be for a 27-inch iMac and a new iPad mini. I think it works out about £250 a month.
You're going for a 64-gig iPad mini then, surely?
Yes, it was, yeah.
But it does make it quite attractive, I think, anybody who wants to make a major purchase, especially at this time of year.
Absolutely.
Okay. What else has been in the news Mac-wise this week?
We've got the Apple released their best of 2012 for iOS and for the Mac App Store. And as we're specific to the Mac, we'll just concentrate on the Mac side of it. The app of the year was Day One, which is a journaling app, currently $6.99 in the UK. And the best game of the year was Lego Batman 2, which is... £20.99.
So day one, what does it offer? What does it do for you?
As far as I can gather, it's for a very stripped down interface for quick journaling, and it obviously looks quite nice as well. I don't use anything like that, and I don't do any sort of day-to-day journaling, but yeah. It seems to be.
I use that app.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. I would pay $15 for it. There's a little menu bar application for it. You can just pop it up and then type your journal entry and then press Command Enter and it saves it. And it's password protected. But the only thing is there's no encryption. So people don't like that. But
But if it says that it syncs via Dropbox, is that not encrypted already, Jacob?
I'm actually not sure how Dropbox's thing works, but it's the fact that it doesn't encrypt it on your computer. It's plain text files. So
I see.
It's more like if you want to get into Dropbox, if you have the person's password, then you can easily get their journal entries. But whereas if you just had that text file, you can just look at it and you don't have to decrypt the text file to open and look at their thoughts and stuff.
Okay. And you're using this app every day?
Yes, I do. It's a good way to organize my thoughts and kind of talk about other things. I write about technology all day, so just talk about my personal life to no one.
So just really exactly just like a oldie-fashioned diary then?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can... There's also, let's see, there are some photo sharing options available. Like you can share your entries and then you can embed photos in them. There's Markdown that's supported, and the interface is just beautiful. It's nice and simple, helps you concentrate.
It sounds very good. You know, if that's the sort of thing you want to do, definitely.
Yeah, it depends on the person.
Are there any competitor journal apps out there that you're aware of, Jacob? How does this compare with them?
I did a roundup of many, I think I did 13, 15, something like that, journal apps for Mac App Store, and this ended up being probably the best one. Some of the other ones were interesting. There's one called Mac Journal, which a lot of people like, but where user interface is concerned, this is definitely the best one you can get.
So in terms of user interface, the way this app is presented, regardless of the type of app that it is, do you think that it's a worthy winner for App of the Year?
I'm not sure about that. Like Cheddar is a great app.
Tell me about Cheddar.
You've never used it?
I've never used Cheddar.
I've never heard of Cheddar.
I've eaten Cheddar. Oh,
it's in the new and noteworthy section right now. Okay. It used to be in beta, and right now it just released on the 11th. So it's an alternative to Reminders. A lot of people uses it. Alex Arena, A lot of people use it. Alex Arena uses it for his daily. I actually don't know what he uses it for. It's a good lists app. You can check things off quickly. Type in what you need to do.
It's a task list type app.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's kind of like Reminders, and that would be a good reason for Apple not to give it the award.
Is it another task list app? Do we need that? The market's quite saturated when it comes to task lists for the Mac.
Mm. Yeah, there is a lot. I mean, I use Clear for mine, which I absolutely love. It's brilliant, especially on iOS. It's great with the touch interface. But there's loads of competition out there, isn't there?
Personal preference, kind of.
Yeah.
How are you finding the touch interface with Clear? You're using it on OS X as well, Richard?
I am, yeah. And it works really well. There's a few little differences when you're using the trackpad, but it works really, really nicely.
Have you tried using Clear with a mouse on OS X?
Nope, I use a trackpad.
Yeah, that's the best way, in my opinion.
Yeah, because you probably have to do, a keyboard and a mouse click or something, do you, to get it to work?
If you had a magic mouse, you'd probably be fine. You should be able to just swipe sideways to complete.
Yeah. So, have you found that difficult, Johnny? Or
I downloaded Clear for OS X as soon as it became available, and had a play with it. And in terms of appearance, you know, they've done a fantastic job. In terms of functionality, I think the functionality is there. It's just difficult to get to. The trend in user interfaces on the Mac at the moment, apart from screwing around with wood veneers, stitched leather and linen, seems to be one to hide all the visual elements that gives the computer user a clue as to how to use the app. I'm finding a lot of modern apps are having things disappear. And, you know, Clear is particularly unclear as to how to use it. You need to go through the instructions at the beginning a little tutorial telling you how to use it, and then you start using it and you very quickly forget. You have to be using it for some time, I think. I think that it works better on the iPhone. The transition to OS X, I'm not sure that it's been that successful, but I'm quite prepared to be in a minority on this one because I know that it has a huge following, and it's not to detract from it being a very good app. It's admirable that they've, you know, sought to do something different, you know, to present it in a different way to make it easy to use. It's just not working for me.
I think you are right, Johnny. I wouldn't disagree with that. I think it doesn't work quite as well, you know, actually on a Mac as it does on iOS. But I still enjoy it. I think there's still an about or something like that in one of the menus where you can go back through those, you know, various touch interactions again. So it doesn't disappear completely.
Understood. But I think whenever you use a piece of software, it needs to be as intuitive as possible for the person using it. Now, in order for a piece of software to be intuitive, there needs to be some conventions that people expect across different applications. You need to know that you perform a certain action to enlarge a window or minimize a window or close a window. You need to know that there's a status bar at the bottom or there's some sort of bar at the top, you know, where it's presenting the options. These conventions, since Snow Leopard, seems to be disappearing, and it's becoming a bit of a mess, in my opinion, a bit of a free-for-all. And I'm not sure whether OS X and the applications on it are heading towards window land, you know, how Windows used to be, you know, with all sorts of design elements that were specific to particular apps and, you know, sort of avoided consistency of expectation, consistency of use across different applications. I can see what Real Mac Software has done with Clear. It does work very well on the iPhone. I know it has a huge following. The transition to OS X, I'm not convinced works, but I see why they've done it. But one thing I would say, given the following that Clear has, I was surprised not to see it in the best of 2012.
It's actually, if you read the top three reviews are 1 stars, the next one is 4, and then the next one's 1. And there's a lot of 1-star reviews. People just don't like it.
For Clear.
Yeah, and they just say it's overpriced, which I can agree with. $14 is a bit ridiculous. And like the top review just has a list of 9 features that aren't included. And
now, I did see a tweet today from Real Mac Software. They are doing some discounts on their software over the holidays at the moment. So you might be able to pick up Clear and some of their other applications for a little less than they normally are. But, you know, for a to-do list app that's costing $15, that's about £10, that does seem to be quite expensive, especially given that you have reminders on OS X. And you have a multitude of other applications.
It's also $6.99 right now. It's not too bad.
So what's that about? I think they're doing 60% up to 60% off, 65% off, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. And the whole what is it? Oh yeah, the whole alternative thing is why people use apps like Clear, though, and the fact that Reminders wasn't the first task management app to be on iOS. And then there's stuff like Fantastical, which is a great app, and it's also on iOS.
Yeah, I use that as well. That's excellent. I think that was one of the things, like you say, the alternativeness of Clear was one of the things that I enjoyed about it. It felt like a fresh approach to doing it, and I enjoyed the simplicity of it as well. And the fact that it integrated so well and it syncs really well between your Mac and iOS device. It's very fast.
That's an interesting point that you raised there, because when Clear was first launched, it was only available on the iPhone and it didn't sync with anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, having it on your Mac does add another level of usability, I think.
Interesting as well, because, you know, Apple wasn't the first to have a task list app in Reminders that would sync information across different devices. there were applications that did that before them. But, you know, as is so often the case with Apple, you know, they take a lead from some of the independent developers, I think, and incorporate some of that functionality into new apps or iterations of existing apps.
Do you guys use Read It Later or Pocket or Instapaper at all?
Now, Pocket used to have a different name, didn't it?
It was Read It Later.
Read It Later. And I've downloaded them. I've paid for them. I used them for a little while, but I sort of lost interest in them. Really, there's so many different ways of storing information. If I'm understanding right, Pocket and Instapaper allow you to save articles that you come across on the web or save web pages in order to read it at another time.
Instapaper is more just like stuff to read. Pocket is almost everything you can imagine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I use Pocket. It's free for a start. And it seems to work really well. Getting it set up to save web pages on the iPhone was a bit of a fiddle on. But that was nothing to do with them. I think it was due to the restrictions in iOS. I find it quite handy because especially when I'm working and I see something interesting pop up on Twitter or Facebook or something like that I think, I'd like to read that, I just quickly pop it into Pocket and you know, it'll be there for me when I have time to read.
So applications like Pocket and Instapaper, and I think, you know, Instapaper started these sorts of applications. This functionality has now been incorporated into Safari with Reader. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Reader. It's the little spectacle symbol that you see on the left-hand side at the top of Safari.
They call it Reading List. Reader when you're on a web page, and it'll in the top right corner, it'll kind of illuminate and it'll in blue, and you can click it, and it'll bring up a nice distraction-free reading pane.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? Reading List, isn't it? But that with Reading List, you have to have an active connection, don't you, to use what's on it?
Offline Reader is available on the Mac and I think on iOS now. I know it's on the Mac because when you save something, instead of those glasses, it'll have a little progress bar and then it'll finish and it'll make it available for offline reading, which is it's nice, but I still don't like it because when you go onto iOS, it just doesn't sync very fast. It kind of takes a while for me at least.
There are two standout apps on this best apps of 2012 that has been listed in the Mac App Store. Those two standout apps for me have to be Byword and Tweetbot.
They're both very good.
I can agree with Byword, but I don't know about Tweetbot because it's too expensive.
Tweetbot is expensive, but I think that they said that there was going to be a high price to it because they were limited to the number of tokens that Twitter allowed them. So I think their business model was they knew how many copies of the software they could sell, and once it had run out, it had run out. So, you know, they factored in, I suppose, the cost of development, you know, the margin they wanted to make, and divided it by the number of tokens that were available. I presume that's how they did it. I think that's what I was reading when it was launched a couple of months ago.
Where are you seeing Byword? It's not on the Mac App Store's best of 2012.
It is in the UK.
Oh, that's funny. It's not on mine.
Best apps of 2012. It's not the obviously the top bit where it's app game.
No, it's in the one below where Tweetbot's the top one.
Yeah, you haven't got Byword in yours.
No, this is interesting. Indeed, discrimination.
I wonder whether they're awarding different awards for different parts of the world, but that wouldn't really make sense.
Let's see. So is maybe Things or Coda in yours?
We have Things and Coda, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pockets in there.
I wonder which one they replaced it with then. Flutter?
No, Flutter's in mine.
Ah. I don't know.
That's strange.
That's interesting. Very.
Are there any apps in this best apps of 2012 that you guys use? Any that you agree with strongly, disagree with?
I was just going to say, yeah, I agree with Johnny on Tweetbot. I bought Tweetbot because of Johnny's strong recommendation of how good it was. And initially I was thinking, well, why do I need another client to do Twitter when I've got a free Twitter one? But now that I'm using it, I really like it a lot, and I wouldn't be changing it. The Byword is very good. I haven't used it an awful lot yet, but it seems to be a nice distraction-free way of writing. But having looked at your show note that you made, Jacob, I had looked at OhmWriter today, and that looks very nice as well. I might give that a try. Flutter, I use.
Oh, yeah, that's a great app.
Yeah,
OhmWriter.
Yeah, it looks really nice, that.
What does that do, Richard?
It's very much it's similar to Byword, except the difference to it is when you're typing, you can customize like sounds that you want the keyboard to make. So you can make nice noises. You can make a typewriter type noise. And you can have the option for it to play sort of quite like ambient, relaxing music in the background as well.
I think I recall this now. I can see that becoming very tedious very quickly.
Well, it's an option. You don't have to have it there.
Is it not just a gimmick then?
No, apparently it's supposed to increase productivity as far as I understand.
That's for me.
A lot of people in the reviews have said it's really encouraged me to keep on writing. So perhaps something about the little bit of feedback that you get as you're typing, and you know, the nice relaxing effect of the music allows you to focus and stay there in the program.
And what's the name of that app again, Richard?
OhmWriter.
And is there a cost to that?
It's free.
Well, I mean, if it's free, you've got to try it, I suppose. Interestingly, what you said about Tweetbot earlier, that you went with that on my recommendation. I think the recommendation paid off for you. I think you begrudgingly admitted that a moment ago.
Yeah.
Interestingly, just this evening, I've had a tweet from Leon Murphy, who says to Real Mac Software, this is what Leon says verbatim, most of my Mac software is based on Johnny's recommendation. That is an absolute true tweet. That's coming this evening. So well done, Leon. Keep listening to me. I'll show you all right.
You'll be getting sponsorships soon.
Fingers crossed.
Has anyone played with Flutter? Have you guys tried that?
I'm not familiar with
when
Flutter.
It first came out. It was interesting, but I got bored of it pretty fast.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to explain what Flutter is, I've had to look it up because I wasn't familiar with it. Flutter, you hold your hand in front of your computer and the webcam detects so you can control music and such like. They've tried to implement some of the functionality of Microsoft Kinect or something. Is that right?
But yeah. Basically, your webcam comes on. So when you're in iTunes, and I think I'm pretty sure it's supported with other music players as well, you can do things like pause the track, resume playing, you can skip forwards and backwards. And I think they've done an update recently, or they're going to be doing an update to add some more functionality to it as well. It feels very sci-fi when you first do it. It's quite a weird experience.
And do you have this app still installed on your computer, Richard?
I do.
And do you use it?
Nope.
Because I'm looking at my keyboard. I'm looking at my keyboard in front of my Mac, and the function keys F7, F8, F9, F10, F11, F2. It controls iTunes for me. I don't need to be waving my hands around.
Yeah,
my hands are already on the keyboard. You know,
that's it. I mean,
I think the clever thing is though it. If I'm right, now you could tell me that this is probably I know certainly it often is the case, but it still works. Doesn't matter what what application you're currently in, it'll still pause your music or what have you. But do the function keys still do that when you're in different apps?
I only tend to use iTunes really now. I have Spotify on one of my iMacs, but I'm finding myself using it increasingly less due to the restrictions they're putting on it.
Spotify.
The keyboard works in Spotify, yeah.
Yeah, and they work in RDO and pretty much everything else.
Now, what I was meaning is, say, for example, you've got iTunes running and you're busy typing a Word document or something like that. If you press your sort of...
Richard, I'll stop you there. I won't have Microsoft software on my iMac. Oh, hang on. We're using Skype at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah.
Darn. There went that.
Sorry, I apologize. Pages. If you're using Pages, slap wrist. Then if you press sort of one of the F7 to F12 keys... does that still operate iTunes, even though you're using different software?
Oh, no, it works system-wide.
Still does, yeah, it still does, right, okay. I thought it did. I couldn't remember whether that was the case.
So, interestingly, you mentioned Flutter there, Richard, and I asked you if you still used it, and you said no. That tells me a lot, really.
Yeah, I think... to be honest, part of that is because I think a little bit of me feels uncomfortable having the webcam on all the time.
Right.
I don't know what that is. A bit of paranoia, I think.
Okay, right, Big Brother is watching. Richard, interestingly, I think there's another problem with this app. Getting somebody to put their hands up in front of them and wave them around in order to control something, I think this is really the reason Apple hasn't gone down the route of touchscreens on the desktop computers. It's the reason why touchscreens on Windows PCs on the desktop computers is what I think just a bit of a gimmick. It's not the action of taking your hands away from the keyboard and prodding the screen or waving your hands around in front of it I don't think that increases productivity, really. I think if you know your way around the keyboard, you can use the function keys to control iTunes, you can learn a few keyboard shortcuts, you can set up your own customized keyboard shortcuts, if you learn how on the iMac, and you could probably be more productive that way. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I was just thinking that a better use for it would be perhaps if it could recognize you doing things like that from quite a long distance. So, for example, I'm just thinking, you know, if you're busy trying to do some paperwork on the other side of your office or something like that, and it's in line, if you could pause if there was a telephone call or skip forwards and that sort of thing. But I don't think it works so well when you're quite far away from it. But I could see a purpose for it then. But yeah, when you sat right in front of the computer and you've got keyboard shortcuts, it's not going to be any faster, is it?
I'm looking at this app and I see that it's getting, of 99 ratings, it's got about 4.5 stars in the best of 2012. So clearly there's a lot of people out there like it, either that or the developer has a lot of friends. I'm not suggesting that for a moment. I'm sure that these are all legitimate reviews. But I can't help but look at this application and think that, you know, it is just a gimmick, really, because it's actually going to slow down my productivity because I'm not using the keyboard and waving my hands around. And then what happens, you know, you've got a fly comes in during the summer and you're swatting around trying to, you know, shoo away this fly, and then your music's all over the place.
Now, the recognition's quite good, Johnny. It wouldn't pick up something like that. You have to purposely hold your hand in a position for a second or two. It's not going to pick up anything like that.
I dislike it even more, holding my hand in the air for a second or two so that it recognises it and picks it up. I'm holding my arm up. My arms are going to get tired. I'm sounding like a real old grumpy...
proper old fart.
So I noticed there's a few games in the Best of 2012 as well. Now, games for me, you know, I'll play on the iOS devices. I don't tend to use them on the iMac. Is this something that is on your radar?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good for you. I don't.
I play Bastion and Trine 2. And actually, LEGO Harry Potter is pretty fun, but I've only played it on iOS. Bastion is a great game. It's a role-playing game. You have this kind of third-person view of a little guy, and you're the kid is his name, and you run around, and you can upgrade weapons. You have a hammer at first. I don't remember what it's called. It has some cool name.
It looks very nice.
Yeah, the graphics are beautiful. The world's really fun. I reviewed it on iPad when it first came out.
I think I'm going to just strengthen my grumpy old man credentials there by saying I don't like games with violence in them, really. Not unless it's cartoon violence.
Now, Trine 2 is a very violent game. It it has this beautiful sparkly world of, it looks like a Disney princess film or something. It actually is really, really fun. You get to change between three characters. It's a side-scrolling game that's kind of, it's in 3D, but you're still side-scrolling in 2D. And the graphics are just amazing.
They look lovely. They really do. Yeah.
For a little independent developer, it's insane. And it's just a really fun game. The soundtrack is beautiful. There's no reason not to play it.
Jacob, I'll pop round your house and you can show me how good it is. I don't think I'm going to pay to download it. I think I'll stick to flinging birds at little piggies.
Oh, yes. Well, that game's not on there, sadly.
They've got Angry Birds Space on there.
Do they?
Certainly in the UK. I wonder if there's a difference between the UK and the US. Is it not?
They think British people have different taste.
They clearly do, don't they?
Well, he doesn't like games at all, so I can disagree with that.
Okay, so that's Mac App Store's Best of 2012, which you can find by launching the App Store icon normally found in the dock of your Mac, and it's in the scrolling thing at the top there. You'll see it if you wait a couple of seconds.
Featured slider.
The featured slider. That's what it's called. It's got a technical name. Actually. It's called the feature slider. Macintosh. Okay, so that was the best of 2012. 2013, it's a whole new year ahead of us. What will that bring for the Mac? Any ideas?
This is something that interests me. I always love a bit of speculation. It's always good fun. What will it bring? I think maybe this year we might see a Retina MacBook Air. What do you think?
I think so.
I think the way that Apple introduces products and then bumps up the spec as they go, you know, to give a, I don't know, if I look at the example of the iMac, that's had about a 3-year life cycle in that particular form factor, I think the industry word is. And now they've gone for the ultra-thin one. It would make sense for a MacBook Air to go to a Retina display. Now that the 13-inch MacBook Pro has the Retina display, I think that that's quite likely.
Or perhaps they might even differentiate the line further still and kind of have like, for want of a better word, like a MacBook Air Pro, which comes highly specced with a Retina display, and then like a lower base model, which perhaps is the equivalent of the old original MacBook.
Well, you have to wonder about this, because the MacBook Air being the really slim model with the SSD and no optical drive, you've got the MacBook Pros now losing the optical discs, moving to solid-state drives and going with Retina displays. Sticking a Retina display on a MacBook Air, you've only got a slightly thinner MacBook Pro. It's only slightly thinner than a MacBook Pro. You're sort of converging the specifications of both machines, aren't you?
That's pretty much what the Retina MacBook Pro is.
Yeah.
The 13-inch.
Well, actually, is the 13-inch thinner, or is it just the 15-inch that is?
They're both thinner than their non-Retina equivalents.
Okay, so that's the hybrid, pretty much. Then you get the Air mixed with the Pro.
The other thing to note is that when the MacBook Air was first introduced a few years ago, it was actually a very expensive computer for what it was, and of course people were aghast at the fact that it had no optical drive either. over the last couple of years, people have become more used to the idea of not having an optical drive, I think. They probably realise that they're not really using an optical drive very much, so it does kind of make sense. The price when the MacBook Air originally came out was quite on the high side, but if you look in the store now, the MacBook Air is a very desirable machine, a very desirable Mac. It's actually quite a reasonable price, relatively speaking.
Absolutely.
It's not the shock that it used to be, I don't think. For somebody wanting a new Mac, or somebody coming to Mac, I think the MacBook Air does make a sensible choice.
It's a stunning starting point, I think. You know, like you say, that the time was, certainly when I bought my 2010 MacBook Air, you were kind of shelling out a lot of money for all that thinness and lightness. And the Mac standard sort of MacBook or MacBook Pro would have made more sense as your introductory Mac. But now I'm very jealous of anybody who's starting off in Mac and going straight to a MacBook Air.
Certainly a desirable machine. Jacob, did you have something on that?
On the MacBook Air?
On the MacBook Air.
I really like mine. I've used it every day for, I don't know how many months exactly, since I think early July or whenever the latest one came out. I got that one, the 13-inch. The thinness is just really nice. It's better than a big hunk on your lap when you're on the couch or something.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you what, Jacob. How about I do the software recommendations, you do the hardware recommendations, and if people follow us, they should get along quite all right.
Okay. All right, sounds good.
In terms of the desktop, the 2013, what's it going to bring for the Mac next year? We've just had the launch of the new skinny iMac. So I don't think we're really going to see any updates on that particular model. Probably just a speed bump at a similar time next year.
Yeah, we'll get a spec bump, won't we? And that'll be it.
I think we'll see a better Mac Mini.
What are your thoughts on that, Jacob?
The current one doesn't really have the greatest graphics card, so I'm hoping to see maybe a better one, a dedicated one from NVIDIA or something.
I think there has been news recently, or rumours certainly, that Apple are looking to change their graphics card supplier anyway.
Mm. I think people were a bit disappointed with the current graphics card, weren't they, in the Mac Mini?
Is this important? It's important for playing games, I presume.
It depends on what, yeah. Well, if you're going to be editing videos, then yeah, you're going to want a better graphics card.
Of course.
If you're going to be maybe, like, a nice thing that you could use the Mac Mini for is an alternative to the Apple TV. So don't buy an Apple TV and then use it as your desktop computer and then take it to your TV since it's so small and you just plug it in and watch your movies on there. Mm-hmm. And then it's the thing is, though, things will lag when it's on a really big screen and out of HDMI. I think it's using the Intel, Media something 4000, which is exactly what the MacBook Pro or MacBook Air uses, and it's not bad. It's just it's very limited, and a lot of games lag with it. You can't play big dedicated games as you would be able to on an iMac, and there's just limitations.
Well, you accidentally said the one thing that probably is coming next year, the Mac Pro.
Ah.
That a little slip of the tongue there, I think, Jacob.
Actually, they might. You never know. We might see one of those.
That's interesting. I was stood in line queuing up for, I don't know, I can't remember, something earlier in the year, and the guy next to me in the queue was complaining about the fact that the Mac Pro still hadn't been updated, and I'm going back months now. This certainly does seem to be long overdue. And it does seem to be that a lot of, you know, hardcore developers, you know, who really hammer these machines are crying out for a refresh on these, for an update. What I've been reading recently on the rumor sites is that manufacturing might be moving to the USA. And the thoughts have been that it could be for the Mac Pro. What do you think on that?
I heard it was for the iMac, actually, but Oh, actually, no. It is for the iMac, and then it might be for the Mac Pro in the future.
But how many Mac Pros does Apple sell each year?
That's why they're moving it here, because it's not going to cost
six and a half.
Lot. Not a...
With it is pretty likely to come from what I understand, because no less than Tim Cook said that was or hinted that was the case, because I understand somebody emailed him to complain that the Mac Pro hadn't been updated for a long time, and Tim Cook actually replied to that email and said, "Watch this space in 2013 or something like that." So I think that's a fairly strong predictor that we'll see something on the Mac Pro side.
Okay, in terms of what's coming next year for the Mac, one of the things that we haven't touched on is the software side of things. Scott Skeuomorphism Forstall departed Apple at the beginning of November. Johnny Ive is looking after human interface development. Is that what they're calling it now?
Something like that.
So could we be seeing maybe the addressing of some of these things I was complaining about a few minutes ago, the inconsistencies between different applications, maybe getting rid of some of the leather and linen?
Yeah, I think we'll start seeing a much cleaner, more modern-looking interface across Mac and iOS. And they'll have to come up with a new name. And I'm damned if I know which cat they're going to go for next.
Any idea, Jacob? OS 10... 10, was it be 10.9? What are they going to call it?
They might go for OS XI, but you never know. I think they're going to go with probably the last one, OS X 10.9, and then they're going to, in 2 years or about a year and a half, release the first beta for the full revamp, which will probably bring touchscreen technology.
Sure. Okay, well, 2013, that's going to be happening in just a few days' time. We'll look forward to see what that brings for the Mac. Macintosh. At this point in the show, we normally do a hot hardware or software section, but really there's not been a lot on the hardware front this week. There is a piece of software, but it's not working yet, so we'll have a look at that next time. So I think we spoke plenty on Apple's 2012 Mac Apps of the Year. So I think it's time to wrap up episode 2. Richard, whereabouts can people find you on the interwebs?
They can find me on Twitter as @RichHarkness, or they can find me at my blog, which is www.areyougettingit.co.uk.
Jacob, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at Pinderworth on Twitter and thepapermail.com.
And you do a bit of writing as well?
Yes, I do. Just a little bit on my blog, and then you can find all the places I write for on my website.
And I'm Johnny Winter. You can find me on Twitter @Johnny_Winter. You can find links to some of the articles I've written at about.me/JohnWinter. That pretty much wraps up episode 2 of Back to the Mac. We won't be recording next week because the world ends in a couple of days' time. But even if it doesn't, then we'll be back in the new year. Thanks very much for listening. Happy Christmas. Back to the Mac is a Q broadcasting podcast. You can contact us at q.am, that's q-u-e.am, or on Twitter @QBroadcasting. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Contact Tariq at tdmss.com.
Apple Macintosh.
How are you, Jacob?
Quite well. Now
jolly good.
It's
nice to be speaking to you. How's your Christmas tree?
Wonderful and amazingly tall.
You know what? I think having seen that picture of your Christmas tree, I think that you are single-handedly probably responsible for double-digit deforestation in North America just by cutting down that one tree. So I'll tell you if I screw up. You'll probably spot it before I do.
I could tell it was going downhill. You're just like, okay.